This is Professor Allen, and welcome to The Quarterbin. In every episode of this podcast, I will summarize, criticize, discuss, and review a single issue from my comic book collection, which I will select at random. Any book from my comic book collection is eligible, as long as I paid no more than 25 cents for it. Was the issue worth 25 cents? Was it a bargain at 25 cents? Or was it still overpriced? Stay tuned and find out. For this 18th episode of The Quarterbin, I'm looking at Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, Book 2, from DC Comics, cover dated April 1990. Like Part 1 of this story, covered in Episode 15, this is a 48-page prestige format book, and this episode is going to go longer than average, so I figured it made sense to talk about feedback here in the episode that's already going to go long. Since the last feedback segment, we've gotten some new listeners who have gone all the way back to the beginning to start listening. Ed Moore of Teal Productions and host and co-host of many podcasts, including the Mighty Thorcast and the Emerald Archer, commented on episode 8 that, like me, he is a huge fan of John Sable. And that's good news to find a fellow Sable man. It's been said that emailing about email is a sin, but what about discussing the feedback I've received about a feedback episode? Because Scott Rifen, one of the hosts from Dinner for Geeks, posted in Facebook extremely kind words about episode 12.5, calling it probably the best email episode he's ever heard. He liked that I don't waste time with small talk, but that I summarize the little stuff and quote the big stuff. He closed with, "We should all learn from his example." Now, that's just praise that's way over the top, but I certainly appreciate it, Scott. Faithful listener Jason Trenner emailed about episode 14, Batman, the 10-Cent Adventure. So the year of the bat begins. I found your choice to be an interesting one. The POV character is one I don't think has ever appeared in a Batman cartoon or direct-to-DVD feature or movie, which, given how they've been pumping those out, is a bit of a shock. Now, that is a funny comment. Jason compares Bruce's feelings of inadequacy to Flash, who also feels at times that even he is not fast enough to save everybody. Back to the issue at hand, well, it does interest me to see how they've managed to kill someone and get the body into Wayne Manor. I might have to check out Bruce Wayne Murderer. You know, Jason, I might check that out as well, especially after Michael Bailey posted that this episode made him want to reread Bruce Wayne Murderer and Bruce Wayne Fugitive. In addition to that comment, Mike Bailey has also gone out of his way on his shows to say really kind words about the Quarterbin, Short Box Showcase, and Uncovering the Bronze Age. So, very appreciated, Mike. Ben Avery has been very active on Facebook as well in replying to show postings and just being part of the online community. He has sent emails before, and I've always plugged his podcasts, which I enjoy, but for some reason, it never occurred to me until now to point out that Ben is an actual comic book writer. His best-known work has been in George R.R. Martin's world, the book Sworn Sword, the second Hedge Knight graphic novel. Jet City Comics, which is part of Amazon, is reprinting the first two Hedge Knight books in anticipation of Hedge Knight 3, The Mystery Knight, that Ben's a part of. He also has coming out soon Job, Man of Sorrows, an adaptation of the Book of Job from the Old Testament. You can check out all of Ben's info and writings at benavery.com, BenAvery.com. Book number one of The Man of Two Worlds generated a fair amount of feedback. Trennis Magnus summed up the whole series as the reboot that time forgot, which is both accurate and funny. The hosts of the X-Files Truth podcast, Agent Shadow and Agent Angela, thanked me for playing their promo, which I was glad to do. If you're a fan of Mulder and Scully and looking for an X-Files rewatch podcast, check out X-Files Truth. Jason Trenner wrote in on that episode as well and commented that he enjoyed it and wanted to track down the issues. I reminded him that my standards are pretty low, and that I only guarantee your enjoyment up to and including the 25-cent price point. Longtime listener and one of my earliest feedbackers, Chris McGee, was also effusive in his praise of this episode. Dear Professor Allen, I have listened to every single podcast of your relatively geeky network. Both you and Emily have been doing a great job on your podcasts, individually and collectively. Well, I think it's safe to speak for my daughter, and thank you for that, Chris. But I must say that episode 15 was probably the best yet. It's not because I'm a fan of Adam Strange. I know virtually nothing about the character. Yet your synopsis had me riveted to my iPhone the whole episode. Wow. As a listener of podcasts, who's been on the listening side of that I can't stop listening scenario, I have to hear where this is going, it's gratifying to think that I can be on the podcasting side of that scenario. He continues, I truly appreciate the way you go about reviewing each comic in such a way that even if it's an issue or a character I've never heard of, I still enjoy the episode. Just wanted to say thanks and keep up the good work. Sincerely, Chris McGee. So Chris, thanks for listening, and of course, thanks for those kind words. Luke Giaconetti of the Being Carter Hall blog, of course, wrote to compare this grittying up of Adam Strange and Ran to the Hawkworld series, which did similar things to Hawkman and Thanagar. He wrote, Thanagar, similarly, had been a sort of idealized alien utopia in the Silver Age, but the post-crisis version turned it into a brutal, heartless dystopia. This new take on Ran doesn't seem to go quite as far, but it certainly adds shading and depth to a planet which previously had been most well known for that time it got teleported right next to Earth. He also commented on my comparison of the Zeta Beam to the way in which John Carter travels to and from Mars in his novels, both of which he said made for great story engines. And I agree. I know that the debacle of the movie a few years ago have given the words John Carter a bad name, but to me, any comparison of a story to the Edgar Bryce Burroughs character is always a positive thing. Again, to everyone, thanks for the feedback and comments. Keep those cards and letters coming. And to make the episode even longer, I'll drop in a promo here, and then when we return, we'll actually start talking about Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, book number 2.
Hey, Wayne, what do a woodchuck, an airplane, and a cook have in common?
Oh, Troy, this is not the time for jokes. A giant dome is about to appear over the town of Chester's Mill.
Exactly, Wayne. The plane, the cook, the woodchuck, all would have been better prepared for Dome Day if they had been listening to Under the Dome Radio.
Under the Dome Radio? I've done some radio before.
It's a new podcast this summer by and for fans around the upcoming miniseries Under the Dome.
A podcast? Hey, maybe we should host it.
We are hosting it, Wayne, and we invite all of you, fellow Domeheads, to come and stay in the Dome all summer long.
So tune in to WUTD for Under the Dome Radio and leave some feedback on the website at underthedomeradio.com.
Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, Book 2, had a cover price of $3.95, meaning I acquired this comic for way more than a 90% discount. The story, creatively titled Chapter 2, was written by Richard Bruning with art by Andy and Adam Kubert. The cover is quite different to my eyes from the first issue, which itself was very arresting. The figure of Adam Strange is glossy, while the rest of the cover has a matte finish. This gives it almost a 3D look, but not quite, and almost a holographic cover, but also not quite. I don't know enough about art or about the history of comic book art to know if this is an unusual method, but it's not a look that seemed familiar to me. The issue itself starts in the Ranian Council Chamber, and the very pregnant Alana Strange is being interrogated by Del, our Adam Strange wannabe. He tried to kill your father, and you told him to run away? He's my husband, you idiot, even if you can't accept that. burn. As Del storms off, claiming that he will capture Strange himself, a councilman pleads with him. Sardeth cannot help us now. We need you. Del turns, anger flaring. You need me now? What about before, when that alien was your hero? Alana begs Del not to pursue Adam, promising that he will return. But the concern is clear on her face. She's not so sure. The Cuberts do expressions really well, and the looks on Alana's face in this scene are great. Back on Earth, Foxy Dr. Fox and her buddy Suze are chatting about... What? Why are we back on Earth? I thought now that Adam is on Ran forever and ever, amen, we'd never have to be back on Earth again. Well, anyway, they are chatting about men and how it seemed like Adam was not coming back when they find a little bit of what he left behind at her apartment. A weird fossil and a notebook where Adam jotted down the timing and location of the Mega Zeta beam that took him back last issue. And the timing and location, Rio de Janeiro, of the backup Mega Zeta beam that Sardeth told Adam about as his absolute last chance of getting to Ran. Guess he wasn't kidding about a long trip, she says. Too late to check out that first beam, whatever that means. Rio, though. Back on Ran, the government's giant voice system is telling the populace to remain calm, that any rumors of unrest are false, which causes more unrest. Of course it does. Marlia from last issue is leading a protest outside the Adam Strange Museum, ending with some Ranian vegetables being thrown at the big statue. The alien may have done us a favor this time. He won't dare show his face around here again. Alone in the Ranian wilderness, Strange panics. He is stuck on Ran forever, and his wife and father-in-law probably and rightfully hate him. Alana visits an unresponsive Sardeth in the hospital, and it's clear that she, in fact, does not hate Adam. She wants him back, she wants her father back. She's about to have a baby, and she wants her life back. Back in the hospital on Earth, Foxy Dr. Fox's friend Suze the nurse tells her that she's letting Adam get under her skin. Eve admits that she's lonely, and we learn that she's been trying to learn Adam's whereabouts from his archaeologist colleagues. Marlia tries to comfort Del, who senses that society is about to crumble on Ran. Marlia is excited about the prospect of political upheaval. Snagging a magnetic ID card or pass card or something from Del, she promises, it'll all work out. You'll see. She finds the protesters outside the museum and tries to lead them. We'll announce the revolution, she says, from their own chambers. Some of the protesters warn her of the danger of her plan, and only one, a bald fella, agrees to join her effort to break into the council chambers. They make their plans. Del visits Alana to apologize to her, but he is still going after Adam. The city has to get this situation under control. If Zared or one of the other city-states learns of our condition... Alana leans into Del. With Adam and father gone, I feel so alone. Adam climbs a rocky mountain, lamenting about Ran's barren condition since the last nuclear war almost 1,000 years ago. A shame that Alec's attempt to stimulate plant life didn't, and then he snaps a vine and almost falls. Finishing his climb to the peak, we see that the barren wilderness is in fact a thriving landscape. Alec, you did it! Back at Marlia's apartment, her husband Krent refuses to let her in. I know what you've been up to. It's best you stay away. He is worried that he will be exiled along with her. She turns away, stifling her tears, then gives us an awesome supervillain glower. Again, the skill in drawing faces is worth remarking upon. I'll show you, she promises. I'll show you all. She sneaks into the council chambers, stumbles upon Counselor Number 6, and shoots him. She escapes, and in the confusion, Counselor Number 1 is blamed for the killing. Another counselor arrives with security forces, and Counselor 1 is executed on the spot. swift Rannian justice. Meanwhile, the bald fella has snuck into the war room to execute some sabotage. He speaks into a comm device. Son to home, the virus program knocked out all the offensive weapons, most of the defense too. Launch missiles, anything that'll kill Ranigarians and leave these wonderful computers and manufacturing systems is okay with me. But this is where Marlia ran off to, and she has overheard that her co-conspirator is in fact a traitor. She blasts the comm device right out of his hand. You're from Zared, aren't you, bastard? He begs for his life, but she blows him away. And I thought I was helping this place. Back on Earth, Suze the nurse is trying to get Foxy Dr. Fox to go on vacation to get rid of some of her stress. They're now in the hospital cafeteria looking at travel brochures, and Adam's sister Janice shows up to lay a nice guilt trip on the doctor, that if she hadn't been preoccupied with Adam, she would have given better care to their father. And as for my worthless brother, the irresponsible ingrate has disappeared again. She storms off, leaving Foxy Dr. Fox stunned. She grabs a brochure, having decided. The brochure is for Rio. Back in the jungle lands of Ran, Adam witnesses an odd ceremony among the people there, and his anthropologist instincts lead him to observe. Fascinating, a religious ceremony. Sardath never said anything about. And then one of the flying monsters appears nearby, flying straight towards the woman at the center of the ceremony. Adam switches instantly into hero mode and moves through the crowd, but they grab him and overwhelm him with their numbers. I'm trying to save you, and that woman, please, I only want to help. Adam awakens to find himself naked in a cave house of some kind. He overhears debate about whether they should kill him in his sleep or wait until he awakens. Some are convinced he is a madman. He stumbles out, but the lady of the house tells him not to worry, that her intentions were more honorable than his. He is totes confused. I was defending you against that monster. Monster? The woman asks, dumbfounded. Hold it. First, tell me who you are, and then I'll tell you why you're an idiot. Adam tries to explain his archaeological job, but she sets him straight. We learn that the flying monsters that Adam so often battles, in fact, never attack anyone unprovoked. Were you researching near their nesting caves, perhaps? She asks, realizing how little he actually knows about his now permanently adopted planet. Adam holds his head in his hands. Everything is so screwed up, can't think straight. Everything that was right is wrong now. Which could actually be the subtitle for this entire miniseries, Everything That Was Right Is Wrong Now. The council chambers have quieted, but a guard making rounds hears strange sounds in the darkness. It is Sardath, escaped from his hospital bed and babbling. I know, you're thinking, who shall replace the old Sardath? Most High Counselor, the man says, leaning over the frail Sardath. I was checking to see if you're feeling... Lie! I'll show you your new leader! Sardath drives a blade right through the man's gut. Rejoice for me! He crouches in the council chamber, and again the art here is terrific. Subtle, but terrific. Paranoia and panic and insanity are all evident on Sardath's features, and just the way he holds his body, as well as the lettering of his ramblings, which convey a combination of mumbling and feeble-mindedness. And the people renounced the old Sardath and rejoiced at the coming of the new Sardath. But shots ring out again. This can't be happening, he says. This is my kingdom. I alone must rule. There's a protest outside of Alana's apartment. Del realizes that without Sardath in control, the Rannian populace is turning dangerous. He is there to protect Alana, who has had a terrible dream of giving birth to a monster. They are interrupted by a huge explosion outside. Marlia runs in. Del, you've got to stop them! Zared's attacking! And in an instant, Marlia is vaporized. Her skeleton falls into Del. The weapons have a little effect on structures, but everyone on the streets in a three-block radius of the blast disintegrates. Del rushes Alana underground to safety. He leaves her, saying that he has duties to the city-state. Who do you think's in charge now? And he dashes off, and Alana grabs her stomach, groaning. The time is coming. Adam grabs some clothes from his caretakers and wanders outside to witness another strange religious ceremony. The woman finds him and asks him what he thinks. What is this place? It's not on any map that I've ever seen. Places of exile rarely are, he is told. It's the home for any poor soul driven from Ranagar, thanks to the mighty Sardath. Look, lady, I don't know what you're talking about. I left my wife's father near death. What's wrong with Sardath? The woman wants to know, admitting that she knows exactly who Adam Strange is. Why do you care about him? Isn't he the one who banished you? Is Alana all right, Adam Strange? Why do you care about my wife? Well, the woman says quietly, she was my only child. Back on Earth, Suze and Foxy Dr. Fox are bouncing around in a Jeep. Watch out, world, it's Suze and Eve's excellent adventure. I can't believe we've flown into Rio and headed up to the mountains to look for a wayward archaeologist. Eve wonders how she got this far, based on some stupid scribbling in a notebook. She wonders just what's so special about Adam Strange anyway. They arrive at a flat rock near the top of the mountain. You sure today's the day? Positive. Right location? Yeah. Eve is frustrated. This is crazy. What do I hope to find? I'm a grown woman. I shouldn't be... But she doesn't finish her sentence. The last Mega Zeta Beam has struck. And Dr. Evelyn Fox materializes on the plains just outside of Ranagar. And she sees a city going up in smoke.
Do you enjoy time travel in general, and the Silver Age of comic books in particular? If so, join me each week on the Superman Fan Podcast. My name is Billy Hogan, and I will be your host. Together, we'll crash through the time barrier and fly into the past to explore the Silver Age adventures of Superman. One week, we will take a look at the Superman family of titles, Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen, World's Finest Comics, and soon, Superman's girlfriend, Lois Lane. The next week, we will feature the Man of Steel's titles, Superman and Action Comics, which will include the Supergirl stories during her run in the back of that title. You can join me each week on Wednesday or Thursday at the supermanfanpodcast.blogspot.com, which is available on iTunes. And your emails are always welcome at supermanfanpodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget to wear your red indestructible cape.
And we're back. More than five decades ago, Gardner Fox created the space hero Adam Strange. As I said when we talked about Book One, he was sort of a watered-down, one-dimensional version of Edgar Rice Burroughs' great John Carter of Mars character. At the beginning, Strange was colorfully illustrated by comics legend Murphy Anderson. The stories included simple science for the 50s-era kids who were growing up at the dawn of the space age. Adam Strange's popularity was sadly short-lived, and by the 1960s, the only stories of Adam Strange available were reprints of the previous late 50 adventures in Showcase or Mysteries in Space. Aside from that, he had been relegated to sporadic guest appearances and team-up titles, and became ever more one-dimensional, quickly plummeting to C-list status. I found him in the 70s, as I mentioned back in episode 15, but those were reprints and not new stories. Even a three-issue run in the revived Showcase title in 1978, followed shortly by an appearance alongside Superman in DC Comics Presents No. 3, couldn't really jumpstart Adam Strange's popularity. In 1987, Alan Moore sent Swamp Thing to Rann. The events of Swamp Thing 57 and 58 are referenced in this story, but are not critical to it. Alec Holland is the Alec to which Adam Strange refers, and the Swamp Thing story involved Holland using his connection to the Green to try to bring plant life to the dying Rann. Those experiments fail, or so it seemed at the time. Although at the end of that arc, it is revealed that Alana Strange is pregnant. So even though 3 years in publishing passed between that story and this one, it appears that only a few months of comic book time have passed. I am making the assumption that it's the same pregnancy we're dealing with here. So those were the seeds, pardon the puns, that Richard Bruning picks up on in this miniseries. Why it took 3 years to follow up on that story, I don't know, but it does kind of speak to Adam Strange's status as a C-list character. Now, I am still really digging this as a sci-fi story. I don't know why it is, but I get the feeling that if this were a standard superhero story, I might have more problems with it, or the problems I have with it would trouble me more. Maybe I have broader expectations for sci-fi, whatever format I experience sci-fi stories in, than I do for superhero stories. I expect more black and white over there. Everyone is either a good guy or a bad guy, and maybe I'm bringing more literary expectations to this. I'm viewing it as a sci-fi story, and I appreciate the subtleties that are reminiscent maybe of a good Ray Bradbury novel, or the best episodes of Twilight Zone. I'll talk more about what I liked in this story, but I'm going to start with a plot weakness. This idea of a secret native culture that Adam doesn't know about just strikes me as unbelievable. Adam is the hero of Rann, and he has a jetpack. It seems that the concept of exiles at all is unknown to him, and certainly this community of them is unknown to him. He observes them as an outsider, questions them about their ceremonies. Obviously, this is a group he's never met or heard of. I do wonder if these are all just political dissidents, or if there is something more significant about the religious practices portrayed here. If Bruning is implying that these folks may have been exiled because of their religious beliefs, which by themselves may be viewed as against the scientific nature of Rann. And again, I can't buy that as part of an ongoing narrative for a character with continuity and with history, but these scenes do serve an important purpose to the plot, so I can be generous. Now, the presence of this exile community does give the author a chance to play with this two worlds motif. Previous versions of Rann gave us the gleaming cities of the planet, Rannagar and Zered, but these both occupy the same world, if you will. They're high-tech cities with scientists, etc., basically twin cities of each other. But this community of exile dissidents, along with lower-tech natives, really shows us that this planet itself is a place of two worlds. And Adam Strange has found himself in the midst of that other world. I do not believe that we've ever met Alana's mother before. Again, I am not an Adam Strange expert, just a fan. If this is indeed her first appearance, then it does answer another one of those obvious questions that the Silver Age story never asked. I like that this story calls into question a common sci-fi trope, the idea that Earth is the only diverse planet in the universe. Have you ever noticed in sci-fi how common it is for there to be jungle planets, technology planets, desert planets, water planets, ice planets? While Earth seems to be the only place in the universe to have all of these climates on one planet? Or for advanced societies to not have varied beliefs? Or for the presence of science councils and advanced technology to wipe out religion? But this version of Rann says no to these very common science fiction tropes, and I like that. And look, this story has a lot of Rannian politics in it, which could get boring In many stories, this type of stuff is boring. Now, I'm not saying Star Wars prequels, but if you think of the Star Wars prequels at this point, I'm not going to argue with you. But Bruning is able to keep that boredom from happening, and I think it's by focusing on just a few characters like Marlia and Del. When the story risks going too far from the emotional core of the narrative, we come back to our lead characters of Adam, Alana, and Sardath, and our one new core character, Foxy Dr. Fox, who is on her own journey. It's an emotional journey for most of the story, and then culminating in this physical journey to Ran. I like the way that Brunig seeded the idea of the two final Zeta Beams way back at the beginning of Book 1 in a way that did not seem to me to be an obvious Chekhov's gun. I mentioned in Episode 15 that I like the idea that maybe science councils are not the best way to rule a planet. There was dissension among the scientists, different views of cloning, and different views on the dissidents, and different views on other issues. That was a nice subtlety. And we've seen that the practice of exile is not an effective strategy for quelling public dissent. Now, I was not in love with Adam's behavior last issue in his last night on Earth, his quality time with Foxy Dr. Fox. But we may have some consequences here happening. Maybe some chickens are coming home to roost for Adam. At the end of this issue, Adam Strange is facing every man's worst nightmare, and he doesn't even know it. He's not sure how his pregnant wife feels about him. He's just met his mother-in-law for the first time. And oh yeah, his mistress just appeared on the planet, and she is here to stay. What could possibly go wrong? The verdict on Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, Book 2, another quarter bin bargain. A volume that pushes the overall story forward, that weaves together the plot strands nicely, literally bringing all the characters together on Ran, giving all the characters moments of plot or characterization. Again, solid Kubert art. 48 pages of quality sci-fi comic book story for 25 cents, come on. That is impossible to beat. And this book did exactly what an issue 2 is supposed to do. It made me want to jump right in to issue 3. And we'll be getting to that issue in about 3 episodes. And that wraps up my coverage of Adam Strange, The Man of Two Worlds, book number 2, bringing episode 18 of the Quarterbin podcast to a close. In episode 19, we'll be getting all magic-y and mystical on you, covering Doctor Strange, Sorcerer Supreme, number 32, cover dated August 1991. If you have any questions or comments about this issue or the podcast, feel free to contact me. Until next episode, I'm Professor Allen, and I'll see you in the Quarterbin. The Quarterbin podcast is part of the Relatively Geeky family of podcasts. Show notes and links are available at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com, where the podcasts Uncovering the Bronze Age and Short Box Showcase also make their home. Links to Facebook and Twitter are there as well. Feedback for the show is welcome at relativelygeeky@gmail.com. And if you like what we've got going here, please leave a review and a rating in iTunes. It'll help more people discover the show. Thanks again for listening. Professor!